Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar.
Rami Yunus and Sarah Emma Friedland's feature-length speculative documentary, Lid, follows the rise and fall of a 5,000-year-old metropolis, Lid, that was once a bustling Palestinian town until it was conquered when the State of Israel was established in 1948. And it is a term that I was familiar with and knew. I thought I knew something about. The term used in the film is so relevant. It's called Nakba. That was the experience of the Palestinians being chased, not just out of Lid, but basically their homeland. The film again is called Lid. We're honored to have with us today the co-directors, Sarah Emma Friedland and Rami Yunus. To both of you, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you so much for having us, Mike. We're really excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. When did this project begin? Because as I said to you before we got started, it could not be more relevant. It could not be a more relevant film to be watched now today as we speak. Where did the genesis for this start?
So the film, like the work on the film started in 2015. I'm a Jewish American. I'm from New York. And I grew up knowing nothing about the Nakba. It's not a history that's taught to us. It's a history that's purposefully erased for us. And that erasure, you know, is what enables us to kind of hold up as Jewish Americans the occupation of Palestine. And so when I read about the Nakba and I read like an excerpted essay about Lid, it just totally shook my world. I knew nothing about it. And I've been a filmmaker for a long time. And I decided, you know, like I really need to use the tools I have to share this history that is very much obviously known in the Middle East, but not known in the US really until now. I think it's starting to become more known. Anyway, so I realized it was not something I could do on my own. And I reached out to a friend who's an activist around Palestine, and she put me in touch with Rami. And we met and we started talking, and the film kind of developed from there. So we've been working on this film for about 7 years.
I'm a journalist, and I am originally from Lid. So that was the basis of the connection. We started working on this back, like what Sarah said, back in 2015, 2016 was the first actual real production trip. And as we progressed, initially we had this idea of, you know, telling the story of the city. Telling the story of what happened in 1948 using this archival footage, and then telling the story of the exiled people and refugee camps. So in a sense, we were hoping to get a straightforward documentary that tells the story of the Nakba, the catastrophe of the Palestinian people. The thing is, there are quite a few films on that, straightforward documentaries that tell that story. So how do you approach a story that's been told so many times before? I mean, we're filmmakers. We want to reach wider audiences. So we decided to spice things up and introduce new elements to a genre that, you know, not tradition. I mean, documentary filmmaking isn't a genre that is traditionally like infused with a lot of science fiction elements. You know, we had this crazy idea of combining a couple of storytelling forms and methods and styles and in just one piece, we took a huge gamble in here, and I remember, you know, saying to Sarah, if we go down, we go down in flames. if we fail, this is going to be epic. It's so spectacular that people are gonna remember our failure. At least that way we'll be remembered, you know. So we decided to go down that path, and I'm so happy we did. So happy we did. We're also, you know, fans of science fiction. I know that Sarah, you're a science fiction nerd, and yeah. I think my appeal to science fiction is, you know, it's just a means to escape reality. being a Palestinian citizen of Israel, you do what you can to escape reality. we ended up with this weird film that we hope will get a wide reach, and like you said before, Mike, educate as many people as possible on the story of Israel-Palestine and provide a much-needed context, especially nowadays with the genocide still unfolding, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's two elements I want to bring into the conversation. One of them is, where is Lid located in present day Israel? And this amazing history that you open the doors to us as a viewer is vaguely familiar. I was familiar with the kind of the broad outlines of some of this, but the detail that you get into in the film, I really want to explore that a bit, because I think that's really one of the main reasons for the film to have been made. But let's talk about where it is in what we now know as the state of Israel.
So Lid is Lid was known as the city that once connected Palestine with the rest of the world. Yeah, it was actually the first capital of Palestine in the year 636. It's located right in the center of Israel. It's about 10 minutes from Tel Aviv. Whenever you fly to Israel, people don't know this, but when they fly to Israel, they actually land. What is now known as Tel Aviv Airport is actually Lid Airport. Before 1948, it was known as Lid International Airport. So that's Lid.
Sure. And I think it's important, like many people know the city by the name Israelis call it, which is Lod. What was the second part of the question?
Well, just in terms of the history, this was a route. This was an important part of the development of this part of the world, the empires, the different things that happened within the city of Lid. Let's talk a little bit about that. We couldn't get into all the history. It's immense, but give us some ideas.
So I will also say that our film is narrated by the city herself. So we decided make Lid a character. We decided to personify Lid. And because Lid has this kind of amazing history, this past glory, we decided to build her character, like the backstory around her being like a diva and like having lived this former greatness and is now living a present that is not anything like that. So Lid, as Rami said, was one of the first capitals of Palestine in 636. It had a train station that connected Lebanon to Egypt. And, you know, if you know anything about the region now, you know that that is impossible to take a train from Lebanon to Egypt. And so it's in the center of the country. And so it was really like a connection both within the region and also outside of the region. It was a threat. It was a city. It was a place of, you know, a place of commerce during the Nakba, during what Palestinian, that Arabic translation is literally catastrophe. So the foundation of the state of Israel, one of the like most tragic losses of that time was the loss of these really incredible cities that existed within Palestine. Cities where there was culture, where there was economy, you know, where there were movie theaters, there were newspapers, there was a lot of like cultural life. And in Lid, that culture and that history was literally bulldozed. Like, you know, that the remnants of that history are not so visible on the landscape, although there are some ancient buildings that are still in Lid, but they're crumbling, they're not maintained, because they're part of this Arab existence that was predated the state of Israel. And so the state of Israel is not invested in their upkeep. And so now Lid is what is known in Israel. Israelis call them mixed cities. And so there's a large population of Palestinian citizens of Israel in Lid. And it's a very, Rami, you should speak about the present because...
Yeah. So like Sarah said, what happened in Lid didn't happen in other Palestinian cities. It went through almost a complete erasure. Around 90 and something percent of its old buildings were bulldozed in the early 50s. The idea behind it was to, you know, just ruin the entire, destroy the entire, demolish the entire old city so that, you know, the return of Palestinian refugees to that city would be impossible. Also, you know, the Israeli story is about, you know, making the wilderness blossom, as if Israelis would like the world to believe that when they founded the state of Israel, there was nothing there, as if there were like no indigenous people there. There was no thriving economy, culture. So the story of Lid, the story of the Palestinian cities in general, like Jaffa, like Haifa, it threatens that story, that narrative, because it proves it is a complete lie and untrue. That's why they just demolished the city. So going back to the fact that we saw Lid as, and like you said, Mike, at the beginning of this interview, you know, the rise and fall of the city. This is we've seen photos of the city from before 1948. It was a beautiful old city. It was completely demolished. And, you know, as a diva, when we humanized the city, personified it, this was symbolic of the fall of the city. Like someone came and stripped this diva of her greatness. And now it's just a demolished, crumbling place with a very glorious past.
First of all, I want to go back to the idea of the diva idea of Lid here, because you're right. She speaks to us as if it's the what if of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And it's the what if of the film that in some ways is not hard to imagine that the possibility of it. It's not beyond the realm of, given its history, given its location. Sorry, there's so much about this land, this part of the story of the Middle East that it's completely feasible that this should be where we are today.
Would have been like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, so I do want to talk about the and there's so many other films I've seen, The Law in These Parts, that there's this is another film that fits into a narrative that I have come to know. And that's why I really think it's important for people to seek out Lid, because it is what you said. You don't hear this history very much. You don't understand the context. So when something like what happened on October 7th happens, it is just such a completely, there's no context at all to understand why things like that happen. In terms of the footage that you have in the film of the Almaq Brigade, that was another documentary. Where did that come from? Where did that part of the, because that's an amazing part of the film.
Yeah. So in act one of the film, we kind of tell the history of the Nakba through both this archival material that we accessed from the Palmach archive, but also from Palestinian survivors of the Nakba. So in particular, a man named Issa Fanous, who is unfortunately no longer with us. And I think it's also really important to talk about both of these representations, because I think a lot of films that are seen by Western audiences on this topic only feature the kind of the Israeli side, the side of the soldiers, like confessing what they did, these kind of shoot and cry narratives, similar to kind of our Vietnam films. Like we generally hear from the aggressors, we don't necessarily hear from the survivors. And so for us, it was really important to have both people in them. So I'll talk about the Palmach footage, and then I'll also talk about the Palestinian survivors that we filmed with. So the Palmach footage comes from the Palmach archive, which is a military archive in within Israel and
in Tel Aviv.
And this footage was shot in 1989 as part of a series that the Palmach was doing on, the brigades during 1948 and all the different,
heroic
acts that they did, the conquests of many different places. And, Lid was one of these places. Lid was one of the last cities to fall in this moment. There was a lot of resistance in Lid. A lot of refugees had gone to Lid after other places had already been occupied. And so in this footage, you hear from the Palmach soldiers about basically going back to the places in Lid and what they did there. And it's very intense footage because maybe they don't think that, surely the Palmach doesn't think that there was anything wrong with this. They're not ashamed. This is like part of their history that they're proud of. So this film was very much coming from that, let's share this narrative of conquest that we did as Israelis during the beginning of the state. So we're able to get that footage. We have a release form for it. We told them we were making a film about Lidda and they gave us the footage. We also, as I said, integrate Palestinian survivors of the Nakba in Lid. In that particular chapter one of the film, we also have Issa Fanous, who again has sadly passed away since filming, but he was 12 years old when the Palmach invaded Lid. And he and other young boys were taken to the mosque where the massacre in Lid happened, the Hamash Mosque. And the Israeli soldiers, the Palmach soldiers, made them basically pull the bodies out of the mosque so that they could be burned. And so Issa has been carrying this trauma his entire life. And so, you know, it's really important to have these testimonies from the survivors of this moment who they're dying now. If we don't record their testimonies, also all of that archive of knowledge is lost. So we can't have the only archive of this memory be held by the state of Israel, right? Because oftentimes archives are, you know, that history is told from the perspective of the victors or whatever. In our film, we're like really aware of that, and we're trying to make sure that we're building an archive of survivors as well.
You're right. Thank you for pointing that out. This sort of in the American experience, it's the soldiers from My Lai going back to talk about what happened there. It's the same. It's the same kind of
brave, tormented soldiers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before I go any further, I just want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Sara Emma Friedland and Rami Younis, and they are the co-directors of the documentary film Lid, and it's LYD. Be looking for this. I don't remember who this is being released through. Help me out.
Yeah, in the U.S., North America, it's Icarus, and in the rest of the world, it's Mad Solutions, which is based in Egypt.
So be looking for it. And by the way, are there any play dates here in Southern California? What have we got coming up?
We're playing in Los Angeles in mid-June as part of Lamley Theater's Culture Vulture series. So we're going to be playing in 4 theaters in LA. So we're really excited about that.
So going to be in San Diego and Sarah's going to be in LA.
Well, congratulations on that. And again, there's so much here. And I took copious notes. And even though you can't tell from the way I've been butchering our interview so far, it's...
One week, how can your mind even be functioning?
Yeah, well, there's that part of it. But again, as we're talking about the mosque, Damash, do I have that? Am I saying that?
Yeah.
The Damash Mosque and its centrality to the city. It's an important element of the character. This thriving city, that it's just mind-boggling to think that we're so focused on what we know the last, you know, few decades of our human experience to understand this is the cradle of civilization. When people talk about the history of the development of mankind, they talk about this part of the world as the development, the cradle of civilization, right? And we have just so over the many years dismissed so much of that history and why it's important to all of us. Mm-hmm. I don't have a question. I just have a
that's a very important observation.
Yeah, definitely.
We're with you on that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, for all of the different peoples who, and I think there are 3 wars that we're still fighting. One of them is the Cold War. Mm. One of them is World War I, and one of them is our Civil War. We Americans are still fighting in some manner of speaking, because the impact of World War I, I'm so glad you brought it into this conversation, the impact on this part of the world is resonating to this day. The arbitrary way in which that was carved up by the British, and then after World War II, and all of the things that have happened, we're still fighting World War I in a very real way. And I say fighting in a way, we're still dealing with the consequences of World War I. And that certainly plays out here.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, like, for us, so we haven't really talked about it, but the main sci-fi element of this film is that we have this alternate reality that comes in and out of the film and is told through these vivid kind of animated segments. Where our documentary participants have kind of animated avatars in this alternate reality that they actually voice. And we decided to start the backstory of this alternate reality with, like, what if that moment of colonization, where the Europeans colonized and divided the Middle East as we know it today,
the Levant,
word, you know, Middle East is a colonialist word, obviously it's the middle. What is the middle? What is it the middle of?
Yeah, like, exactly. So we created this alternate reality and the roots of this alternate reality in the essentially cancellation of the Sykes-Picot Agreement in post-World War I. In our alternate reality, the indigenous people of the Levant, of what nowadays is known as Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, and Jordan, rejected the British mandate and the French colonization of that region. They fought back, and they were able to drive the Europeans away. So this is how we build the foundations of this alternate reality, in which colonization and racist European ideologies do not exist in our region. Now, it's very important to say that in our alternate reality, it is not a utopia. Obviously, we dream of a better reality, and we used our film to envision that, but it's not a utopia. It's just a place that is less racist, more equal, but it's not a utopia.
It has self-determination.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, this is a fairly underreported part of the consequences of the post-World War II era, in that the Americans brutally kicked the British and the French out of the Middle East. They leveraged all of their political capital to make sure that they were the dominant political force in the Middle East from then until today. And that's still the case.
Yeah.
So we bear a tremendous amount of responsibility in all of this. The situations in Egypt with the continuing kind of dictatorial regimes that have been in place there, kind of a client state of the U.S. There's so much of our fingerprints all over this part of the world that we have not served humanity very well.
Yes, completely agree. Completely agree.
But here's the good news. So the film provides a much needed background on Israel-Palestine. And I think the average American needs a little bit of context to understand that what's happening right now to the Palestinian people in Gaza and in the West Bank, by the way, something that maybe
the settlers and what's happening in the West Bank, yes.
The army are killing innocent Palestinians on a daily basis in the West Bank. So more than 400 people have died since the beginning of the war in the West Bank, obviously because of the large scale of the genocide in Gaza. This is overlooked, but it needs to be said. So anyway, what I was trying to say is, so the American taxpayer is funding all of this. You, Mike, you are paying for this. And I think the good news is that this can be stopped. This can be stopped. And I think in the States, we are seeing a historical moment. The tide is shifting. And I think if more Americans wake up and put pressure on their administration and their president to stop, funding genocide of people. I mean, your taxpayers' money shouldn't go to arm a war machine, an Israeli war machine that is driven by revenge and a very racist ideology in which one ethnicity is more supreme to the other ethnicities in a specific region. So I think that if you apply more pressure on your administration now, and using the film to understand that this is not a new thing, this has been going on for a lot of years, and this needs to stop now. So yeah, hopefully more Americans will wake up, and in a way we'll be honored and privileged if our film can help in that sense.
I think that President Biden runs the very real risk of jeopardizing his chances of being reelected if this continues, because there is a huge swath of younger voters and people who know and care about these kind of things. There's no doubt what's happening is we're approving arms sales at a time when a state is committing a war crime. This is a flat out, straight up war crimes being committed. Not only just that, but also of all those people who have left Gaza, wherever they may have gone, they're not coming back. The Israelis will make sure they never come back into Gaza. I think this is sort of off. But I think the reason the Egyptians and the Jordanians have been so reticent to bring people from Gaza there is because they know they'll never be able to go back. And that right of return is a war crime as well. So there's so many things that are going on right now that are so obvious that I do think that.
I don't think they're going to succeed in that. I mean, gone are the days where ethnic cleansing can be done so easily. I mean, everything is filmed now. The world is watching, and those are so isolated right now. Like, they're the only ones in that So I don't think that that's happening. And there's another Palestinian thing that people don't take into consideration, but Palestinians are very well known for their, in Arabic we say sumud, resilience. It sounds a bit cliche, and I hate to speak in cliches, but that's kind of the only thing that kept us alive over the years. Yeah. We've been through erasure attempts. But the fact that, you know, we still have Palestinian cinema, we still have Palestinian art, is kind of a little miracle. The fact that there is still Palestinians in Palestine, there will be Palestinians in Gaza after all of this is done. You know, I don't think there will be, not real, but like ethnic cleansing on the scale that the Israeli government wants. They're not going to settle Gaza again. They're not going to build settlements in Gaza. It's just not happening. No way.
Well, thank you for so many reasons. Thank you for this film, Lid, and for your time and for your efforts and for the story that you tell in the film. And for me, knowing a little was helpful, but you don't have to know anything. You just have to essentially understand what this film is about and why it was made and why we need to be paying attention, because these are real world implications that are being addressed here, real world implications. So thank you to both of you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us tonight. And I hope that people will be able to catch the film. We also have a theatrical run coming up at DCTV's Firehouse Cinema. And you can find all the screenings at lidinexile.com.
Perfect.
That was good. It's nice plugging.
We've been talking to the co-directors of this documentary film, Lid, and that would be Sara Emma Friedland and Rami Younes. To both of you, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.